On this spotlight episode of the Nerd Outcast podcast, we talk about Satoru Iwata. Hello and welcome back. I'm your host, Chris Bashan, and like I mentioned a moment ago, this is a spotlight episode. These episodes break from my normal format. They tend to be shorter, kind of like a micro episode. I do not have a huge panel of experts with me. There is no outcast. These episodes are really just a chance to kind of focus on a very specific thing that's going on in the world. Real quick, just to introduce who my guests are. My first guest is sitting here in the room with me. What's your name, sir?
Christian Masonic.
Welcome back, Christian. How you doing today?
I'm doing fine, but mournful.
Mournful. Well, we'll get to why you're mournful in just a second. My next expert is all the way in New York. He's been on before, and his name is...
T. Scott Ross.
Welcome back, Scott. How are you doing?
Doing okay. Hanging in there.
Yep. So, as people could guess, you're both huge Nintendo fans along with me, and early last week, it was released that... Satoru Iwata, the president of Nintendo Corporation, had passed away due to complications with cancer. And this really bothered me, actually. I was actually really down about this. And I thought to myself, this is really stupid. I mean, this is a businessman in a country I've never met before. But for some reason, his death really bothered me. And then I kind of wanted to chat about that and kind of explore that and kind of talk about him as a personality. Because I feel... people know about filmmakers and people know about musicians, but I feel within the world of games, a lot of people don't know about the personalities or the innovations or the people that cause innovation within the genre of video games and, you know, maybe electronics as a greater whole. And I think Satoru Iwata was definitely one of those people. So I kind of wanted to give a small episode to talk about him, his legacy and his influences and his personality. Gentlemen, is there any specific way either one of you want to start this discussion?
Well, I guess the one thing I'll say is that I was sort of, you know, the big present day trio of Nintendo.
And who is that? Who would you call that?
I would say that was Iwata, Shigeru Miyamoto, and Reggie Fils-Aimé. I would say the one this is a terrible way to start this, but if you were to ask me prior to Iwata's death to rank those three people in terms of my own fondness for them, I probably would have put Iwata last. I didn't have... to me, he was almost the suit. Like, he was, you know, he was the president, he was the CEO, he seemed to be the least dynamic, at least on camera, of the three of them. I didn't have a great understanding until his passing of just what a force he was development-wise of so many things before he... I just kind of saw him as a businessman. To me, you know, Miyamoto was the, you know, the creative genius behind Nintendo, and he was actually the one I'd always thought about passing away. You know, Miyamoto's a good 10 years or something older than Iwata.
Sure, yeah.
So, if anything, you would think he would be the one to go first, and that would have been just such that immediately struck me as something that is going to happen, you know, within the next 20, 30 years, and will really have an effect on me. Iwata never really occurred to me to be upset about. But then I learned so much more about him. I liked him as a guy.
Mm-hmm.
He was certainly a much more approachable presence than Yamamuchi, who took over for
him. We'll talk about that. Scott, what about you? Any initial reactions? Or you? I mean, you texted me while I was at dinner with the news, so you knew before I did.
Yeah, I mean, I was at a dance competition. You know, my mom's a dance teacher. I was in the middle of a dance competition, and I just, every time I'm on my phone, I randomly check IGN when I'm, you know, hanging out, and it said Iwata had passed away, and I was really, really grief-struck, and it's weird. It's like, you don't think you would be, you don't think you have any feelings or care about certain people, but then you do, and it was weird. It was like an uncle passing away. It was like a part of my childhood, because you know, I just remember from every E3 and from all the directs and all the Ask Iwata and this last E3 and the one that he missed because he wasn't feeling well. Like, it was really hard. It's like losing an uncle. Yeah.
I mean, I guess we should give a little context, and Christian, you already started to do this, but as we've mentioned, Satoru Iwata was the CEO of Nintendo, the first president of Nintendo who was not part of the Yamauchi family. And I don't think people realize how big of a deal that was, because Nintendo is 125 years old. It is a very old company. It has obviously not been a video game company that entire time. If they have been, that's very impressive. but it has been ruled by the Yamauchi family. So for him to be president, and especially at his age, he was, I think, in his 40s when he was named president. That was very young and very, very much a different move. Christian, you kind of describe him as the suit of the three, of that triumvirate. And he definitely was that. I kind of equate him to almost Steve Jobs.
Yeah, you know. That's fair.
Yeah. But his like demeanor, which you kind of get to see come out in his Nintendo Directs, which he created, or the Iwata Asks. His demeanor, the way he was like very calm, and even kind of had like a humor about himself. I mean, there's a video where he's just like staring at bananas. I mean, that's very. Not Japanese businessman. Yes, he. I don't know. Like watching him, I'm like that. That's the type of boss I would like to have.
He's such a calm, subdued, almost presence. To the fact where they can, it can almost be comical how just kind of reserved and to the point. So when he's doing arm motions and directs and stuff like that, whereas you know Miyamoto's this 6-year-old boy.
Miyamoto is the kid.
Charismatic figure as well. To have some kind of, somebody who's kind of reserved, like in a 3-piece suit, just kind of standing there. It's, it was an interesting dynamic between the three of them.
Yeah. Scott, you have any comment on any of that?
Well, Iwata, he seems so kind and so truthful and so real. He was always in the suit. Miyamoto had the sport jacket, but like the sneakers, and Reggie is just the big goofball. But kind of Iwata, you know, was very calm, a very peaceful, a very loving, a very caring presence. And after he passed away, and then I started reading more about him, I found it mind-boggling the things that he was a part of, the things that he created. I mean, there was one story. I didn't realize how influential he was with Smash Brothers, my favorite game of all time. He helped develop the original one on 64. But not only that, Sakurai worked himself to death doing Melee, put himself in the hospital, and Iwata finished the coding for Melee. So Iwata has his stamp on Melee. Also, Iwata is the reason for my main addiction right now, which is Amiibo. That is the entire concept of Amiibo. Iwata came up when, you know, he was just jotting down some things on a notebook, and he's the complete cause of that. But he's just, he had his hand in everything, and Nintendo's always been a company, I've always said this on every podcast, Nintendo, I feel, is the only company that innovates. In every, even if they're the top-selling game at the time or the worst-selling game at the time, they're innovating. The only thing the other companies are doing are making games with better graphics. But Nintendo is actually going, let's make a different type of game. Let's make a different kind of experience. And I think that all goes back to when they hired Iwata in 2000.
And, you know, the other, you hit on, you know, some of the stories that when I was learning about him, all tickled me, the Smash Brothers stuff and how he kind of saved Melee and stuff. But one story that really blew my mind, just because I would never have imagined Iwata would have had such a role in it, is Earthbound. He was so instrumental in that game. He essentially did all the coding of it himself. It was like a huge passion of him, which, you know, because of the fact that, you know, we haven't seen much of Earthbound since he took over, there was this kind of sense that Earthbound was done. The fact that he had that, like, he clearly cared about it more than any of us possibly could, because it was practically his baby, really blew my mind and really made me think of him in a different way.
You know, you both mentioned this. When he took over to pick up the coding for Smash Brothers, he was already, I believe he was like chief operations officer of corporate planning. He was already like a very high position at Nintendo. So for him to step in and finish the coding to essentially like do grunt work, really, I thought spoke really impressively to his work ethic. And the thing that I remember hearing about a couple of years ago when Nintendo was having huge financial troubles is a lot of the investors wanted him to punish, you know, fire people, lay people off, and he rather took a pay cut,
half a salary,
took a half salary pay cut in order to keep people employed, because you know, to paraphrase him, like, it does no good to punish or release the talent just because the consoles or the games are not selling well. Like, that doesn't encourage a healthy atmosphere. So I always thought, just from like an employer point of view, that was really fascinating. I really liked that about him.
He was always very surprisingly willing, especially in this industry that's so kind of hype focused and so spin focused, which I suppose is any industry, but he was always really kind of willing to cop to, you know, people didn't like something that he was responsible for, he would like apologize. Like,
yeah.
Amazingly, especially now, like, you know, Nintendo's E3 of this year was not necessarily regarded as the best E3 they've ever done. And I remember, like, one of the last public statements that Iwata could have possibly made was apologizing for not meeting people's expectations and hoping that that next year they would meet it. And, like, 2 weeks later, he was dead. But, like, so he couldn't have been 100% when he was making that statement, but he still mustered up the strength to be like, I'm sorry, I'm going to do better next time, which is amazing for somebody to feel the onus.
He also, one thing that really, the one time that I actually did shed a tear in this was when I saw a post, and I reshared it on Twitter and Facebook, but he had updated his profile on his Miiverse, because he has you can be friends with Iwata on the Miiverse. He updated his status, and I'm paraphrasing, but it said something to the effect of, you know, don't be sad, you know, please continue to enjoy the games. And the last thing he said was, thank you for understanding, or please understand, which is what he always says at the end of, you know, it's just kind of one of his catchphrases, but it was, that's so sad. I mean, he's 55 years old, super talented, and the cancer that he had is one of those cancers that's just, it's bad. It's really, really bad. Yeah, it's bile duct tumor. It's really, really bad. But, like, I think Nintendo knew that he was, I think they didn't let a lot out. It was a surprise to everybody, but I don't think that Nintendo was surprised. I think Nintendo knew full well that they were going to lose their CEO very, very soon, because it is a very devastating disease without a real cure.
The sense almost was that part of the reason for the Muppet Nintendo Direct for E3 was that they knew Iwata was not up to being appearing on camera and would have looked grim. And so they kind of went the puppet route to kind of avoid having to physically show him.
Yeah. I thought that was really funny and effective. The puppet.
Yeah, super. Like, at the time, I'm just like, oh, look what a fun thing they're doing. Never suspecting it could be for any other reason.
I mean, I need to go back and watch some of his Iwata Asks, which are his kind of Q&A that he runs with developers about how certain games are made. But he did that Smash Brothers video where he fought Reggie at the E3 last year, and that video was so well produced and it's so freaking funny to watch. I don't know, it's just so funny to see, like, the corporate president and the American president like beating the crap out of each other in this mock Dragon Ball Z battle. It was really, 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 really just the cool, fun humor that they had about themselves. Let's talk a little bit about his legacy. Like we mentioned, he came into corporate president. Oh, what was it, 2001, 2002?
Something like that.
Yeah.
Where he was at HAL.
Yeah. And we've kind of touched on this a little bit, but the question I want to pose to you all, what do you think are some of his most important influences or legacies in the realms of video games that he has, that he's had an effect on?
I would say, besides just, you know, the specific games that you can, like, look at his gameography and point out the things he worked on, you know, he clearly was a large part of the impetus that Nintendo's reason for this kind of blue ocean strategy that they undertook in the mid-2000s, where, you know, they were coming off the GameCube and the Game Boy Color and Game Boy Advance, which weren't rousing successes, although they are awesome systems. But there was clearly Nintendo was, you know, third place and needed something new. And he was kind of he'd just taken over, and he kind of did this new push towards, he made the DS, and he made the Wii, and, you know, they seemed ridiculous or, you know, silly to people at first blush, and they really turned Nintendo's fortunes around. So that was clearly a result of his leadership. That was really, you know, kind of something he pushed, and, you know, before they'd had Yamamuchi, is that how you say that?
Let me look this up. Make sure we're not
Yamauchi.
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 He'd been president from 1949 to 2002, which is just insane. So, you know, he was not one to kind of change his ways. And so to have somebody new take over, a young guy, and just completely kind of shift their focus. So whatever you want to say about Nintendo's, you know, focus on casual gameplay and the Wii and, you know, whether or not they're abandoning hardcore gamers, it was a success financially. And it did lead to a lot of interesting innovation that the rest of the industry, you know, rushed to implement as well. So you got to give them that because that was a huge turnaround for them.
You know, just speaking to the DS specifically, like there's this really great article on Wired.com about this. But Chris Kohler of Wired.com mentions that, you know, Iwata had a huge push into creating the DS and then, of course, the Wii that came after. And like you mentioned, Christian, pursuing a blue ocean type of philosophy. And his big fear, and I need to go back and watch this. He's been the keynote speaker at GDC, which is the Games Developer Conference in Tokyo, I believe, which is essentially like their E3. It's the Japanese huge technological conference. And that I think the 2000 and... I can't remember if it's 2001 or 2004. He talked about how video games need to grow. They need to get out of like this demographic of 18 to 35, or the industry is going to be at this ceiling that it'll never break. And that was one thing that he really, really strived for, was making games for everybody. And one of the things that he felt that got in the way of gaming was the controller. Like, people outside of the 18 to 35 range, like, the controller was actually a really big issue for them. So that was one of the huge pushes to put a stylus in with the DS and provide a very simple form of control. And of course, the DS is the second best-selling video game system of all time.
After PS2?
Yeah, after the PS2. So, and I mean, I remember seeing like people who I never expected to have a video game system have a DS. I mean, I couldn't believe it.
Yeah, and everybody thinks of that. It was Wii, like that got so popular and had a lot of people, but it was also the DS. DS, yeah. A lot of people you wouldn't think. Because it seems almost like a device. It seems like a PDA of, you know, in that time period, 2005, like a little BlackBerry type thing.
I mean, you could maybe attempt to make the point that the DS is what started, like, touchscreen gaming, because now you have it on every iPhone, every Android, you know, like the DS did it first. That's just really, really fascinating to me. Scott, any thoughts on any of that stuff?
So Iwata oversaw the DS and the Wii, and those were a second golden age for Nintendo. But it was a controversial golden age for Nintendo, because that's when Nintendo really started to leave the hardcore gamer, because, you know, the Super Nintendo still was the hardcore gaming system of its time. Nintendo took a turn with the Wii, and they wanted grandma to play video games, and they wanted little 6-year-old Stevie to play video games, and the 30-year-old, 34-year-old mom to play the games too. So, but that strategy clearly worked. Unfortunately, after the Wii, you know, hit its peak, and then they came out with the Wii U, everything just took a big old fall.
Yeah, you know, it's I've thought about that. I mean, I don't blame Nintendo. They just, like Christian, like you mentioned, they just came out of the GameCube. The GameCube was designed to fight the PS2 and the Xbox, and it was more. What was it? It had more processing speed than the Xbox, and yeah, it had
that's technically the best of the three systems.
Yeah, technically it was the powerhouse, and it was a distant third place. So I get their desire to not compete or just realize, you know what, this is an arms race that we just don't need to be in. And when you look at Sony and Microsoft, I mean, they're two huge tech-heavy corporations. Yeah. So there really isn't a way for Nintendo to continually fight against that. Like, that's not what Nintendo is. They're not those giants. But yeah, I mean, the Wii was definitely... Between the DS and the Wii, I felt the DS did a much better job of maintaining a hardcore audience, but also expanding. The Wii expanded, I feel, at the cost of some of its hardcore, for sure. And I've always, you know, hypothetical question to myself, what if the Wii had been HD? You know, but then of course the price would have been higher, so maybe it wouldn't have sold as well. I don't know. I mean, the original PS3 was $600 when it first came out, so that was an issue.
I mean, it really was. I mean, that's why the PS, I mean, you know, it never reached the heights of PS2, but you have to remember, I don't think any game systems are going to reach the heights of the PS2 and the Wii and the DS because of mobile gaming and just people. I don't know. I feel like I'm one of the few people who really want to sit down and play a 40, 50 hour game. What are the darn kids doing these days? But do they sit down and play 60 hour games? Why are the consoles not selling as well as they used to?
I mean, they don't sell. I mean, you know, PS4 is doing well. I mean, it's not.
Yeah, but not anywhere compared to. I mean, the PS3 did well, but it's compared to the PS2, it's a failure.
Well, I think I would say is, yeah, there's probably the same amount as there ever was that want to sit down and play these 60-hour games. But it's that all those people who bought those PS2s, most of them weren't playing the 60-hour games. Most of them got it.
For a DVD player.
Yeah, for a DVD player, or they played, you know, a little bit of Grand Theft Auto 3, and they were done. Like, most of them probably didn't. Same with Wii. Most people got that, and they played Wii Sports, and they played Wii Fit, and that's it. They didn't play Galaxy. They didn't play Metroid Prime 3.
I think the DVD player was a big push for the PS2, which is why they put the Blu-ray player into the PS3 and really charged high for it, because I think they were banking on that technology to get their product into people's homes, and it just, the same thing did not play out.
That's true. The only reason I have a Blu-ray, though, is because of my PlayStation.
Yep, me too. That's the only Blu-ray I currently have currently want, honestly. So, So just to bring it back to Iwata, is there anything specific that he's worked on that's really affected you personally? I know for me, we haven't brought this up, but I'm a huge Kirby fan.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I love Kirby. Especially the original NES Adventure, I think, is a really fantastic game. And
that's him. Know, that's Iwata. That's all him.
That's his baby. That's all him. So that's what I would throw out there. I would thank you, Mr. Iwata, for bringing us Kirby.
I would say Earthbound would be the one that really, you know, the fact that he kind of saved the day on that. You know, obviously he, you know, Mother already existed, and he didn't even start off with the development of Earthbound, but it was really not going well to the point where it was probably going to get canceled and never come out.
Are you an Earthbound fan?
I mean, I'm a huge Earthbound fan.
Oh, okay, cool.
And so the fact that he kind of looked at it, apparently, and I just learned about this today. I mean, I had a vague sense of it, but when I was listening to this other podcast about Iwata, that I won't pimp because we're only talking about, you know, this is the podcast you should be listening to for all your Nintendo needs. It was the fact that he went in and it was he was like, this isn't going to work, so either we're going to cancel this or let me go in and take some time and, like, basically by myself fix all your fucked up coding so that we can get this game out. And they were like, go for it. You got it. He just kind of by himself took the onus on himself to save this game for really no reason. And he did. And it turned out to be, like, one of the best games ever. And, you know, really, you know, for especially for Western audiences, we wouldn't know what Mother was if not for Earthbound. So that's a huge thing.
Earthbound has a huge, really devoted cult following.
Yeah.
It's a game that I have actually not played.
You've never played it.
I have not. And this is a story for another day, but I really need to. That's on my bucket list.
Get it on the virtual console.
I know it's on virtual console. I know. Scott, what about you?
I mean, I've already said this, but I would like to thank Iwata for Smash Brothers. I mean, just his idea of having all of the Nintendo characters come together and beat the crap out of each other, and it included, you know, 300 to 400 hours of my time in college playing Melee, endless battles against Tom Brown, and just amazing, amazing memories.
Did you play the N64 version?
I did, but it must have came out at a weird time when I wasn't. I think it came out at the end of the 64's life. Yeah, it came out at the end of the 64's life, and I was kind of knee-deep into experiencing the PlayStation with Final Fantasy VII and then, you know, Resident Evil, and I just started, you know, cheating on Nintendo with the PlayStation. And the funny thing is, the GameCube came out, and I didn't even know that it came out. Like, I didn't know that they were making a system. I was, you know, in high school doing other things. I'd started to go to college, and I just didn't know that it was coming out. And then I went home for Christmas and I was like, oh, it's out. Oh, okay. And I just bought it. And I got Super Smash Bros. Melee with it. And my God. And that, and he made that. Iwata was responsible for getting Capcom on board with the GameCube as well. And Resident Evil 4 to date is still by far the best Resident Evil. And all the stuff that Uncharted does, I feel all the stuff that Uncharted, now this is not really Nintendo, but all the stuff that Uncharted does that makes it a really cool game, and like the action movie sequence, but then you're still doing stuff to help the movie sequence. I feel like that started in Resident Evil 4. That's the first time that I really remember that being done really well.
Comparison made, but you're right. That's a good point.
Yeah. Oh, now all these wonderful, all these wonderful things. Yes. We should really do another one of these on like another video game personality sometimes. Maybe.
Yeah, you should do. Maybe.
I would like to talk real quick about Nintendo's strategy going forward. Like the two candidates to replace him are Miyamoto and Takeda. I just would like to.
Both of these men are currently acting presidents now.
I think it's clearly not Miyamoto. Miyamoto, there's no reason in the world for Miyamoto. If Miyamoto wanted this job, Miyamoto would have had this job before.
Yeah, I think it's more important for Miyamoto to be preserving the IP and to make the games. Takeda, he's definitely the ideal person for him to be the president. He was behind the decision to really give the Wii a new interface. You know, and not just make it a GameCube with better graphics. He's all about hardware, and if Nintendo really wants to survive, they need to nail this NX, whatever it's going to be. But
I think Miyamoto. The two things I'd say on that. One is that I think he's been put in this acting position just kind of, you know, it freaks people out. The CEO dies. Stocks go down, that becomes a whole business catastrophe. I think Miyamoto's there to be like, it's okay, guys. We still got the main guy. We're fine. Don't sell your stock. But I think he's there just to calm the waters for a while. But I've seen no indication that he's a businessman, really, Miyamoto. I mean, he's a creative type, and he's the most important person Nintendo had before Iwata died, and now that Iwata is gone, Miyamoto's really, you know, he is Nintendo, so I think they need him to keep doing what he's doing. Also, the guy's like 63, 64 years old. Like, you're going to choose. You have to choose. I think if you want to think about the future, I think you get somebody younger than Miyamoto. I think you get somebody who has a good 20, 25 years in him to maybe shape a future legacy. Miyamoto's really, I mean, he's not going to be around forever. He's bound to retire one of these days. So I think put your money on him probably isn't a good idea.
I would agree with both of you. I think Miyamoto is the toy maker. You know, he's not, he's just not a businessman in that sense. Who is, who's Takeda?
He is, he has some higher up, business, title right now. I don't remember exactly what it was. He does have some development experience as well. But it's mainly hardware.
He's a hardware guy, yeah.
He's a very hardware-focused guy, which probably isn't a bad idea, having somebody who's maybe a little bit more attuned to that in charge. It strikes me. I don't know a lot about his history, but I think he's been around a while. So he's probably not a super young guy either. But very hardware-focused.
Oh, interesting. I know Iwata came through a programming background, so
yeah.
We've seen the successes and hardships with that. So I'll be curious to see what Nintendo does. Scott, do you have any predictions? Do you think it will be Takeda or?
Yeah, I'm almost positive that it'll be Takeda. I mean, like I said, he was behind. He was the lead developer on the Wii console. He is on the council as we speak, and you know, he's he's got what it takes, and he also was very close with Iwata. I mean, everybody says that. Sakurai and Miyamoto, they've all said that like Iwata has set the stage for Nintendo, and he had a plan for Nintendo, and everybody is going to follow through with Iwata's plan, even though he's not here.
Oh.
So I just looked him up, Takeda, so I'm going to give you a little bit of background. Interestingly, he's older than Miyamoto even. He is pushing 70. He's been with Nintendo since 1972. He created, so while he is mainly a hardware guy, he has created some major software titles, including Punch-Out. He is responsible for Punch-Out.
Ice hockey and pro wrestling too. Those
games. Yeah, that's right.
Those games were awesome.
He worked on The Legend of Zelda, the original Legend of Zelda. He is credited with the invention of the analog controller with the Nintendo 64.
Hmm.
And he was also he was the lead developer on the Wii. So he's really been around for a while. He's not necessarily the young guy that I was citing, but he certainly, you know, cut his teeth on Nintendo. So he probably is a great choice.
Yeah, I mean, it'll either be him or Nintendo will go left field, you know, which they do that. That's what they do sometimes, so.
Just promote Reggie to CEO of Nintendo.
Oh my gosh.
Move Reggie to Japan.
Move Reggie to Japan. He would be a giant, Reggie. Literally.
When Reggie was lifting the GameCubes for that World Championships promo, I pissed myself laughing. That was the funniest thing I'd ever seen.
When he was doing push-ups and he was like, Nintendo 62, Nintendo 63, Nintendo 64. I was like, nice.
He's such a character. Just such an odd choice to be like Nintendo's American representative.
Yeah. One thing we haven't mentioned, but there has been a huge outpouring and support from the game community itself.
Yeah.
From journalists to programmers, from Capcom to Bethesda, from the East, from the West, like everybody has been paying
Sony,
respect. Yeah, Sony, Microsoft.
They all came out too.
Yeah, I think everybody realizes like the genre, the industry lost somebody great, you know, and that everybody is diminished, unfortunately, with his passing. So it's nice to see people put aside the console war, whatever you wish to call it, and see that respect and honoring put out there. So, gentlemen, that's all I've got. If there's anything else you all want to touch on.
No, I mean, I guess I'll just say, you know, kind of looking forward to Nintendo, it's really going to be interesting, you know, to see exactly what happens. You know, certainly for the short term, of course, things will remain the way they have been going. But, you know, I do think, you know, eventually a new person in charge is going to change some things. And, you know, there's a degree to which, you know, like, to be perfectly frank, you know, the last few years when Wii U wasn't going gangbusters, as great a console as it is, it just hasn't been selling. And there was a lot of talk of, like, should Iwata go? Maybe he shouldn't be in charge anymore. And they seem to be willing to stay the course, at least to some degree. I don't think there was any sense that their next console would be a Wii 3, but I think this will change some things, and you know, maybe somebody will kind of push away from the Blue Ocean strategy that, you know, Iwata championed, and maybe somebody else will think it's time to change. So it's actually going to be very interesting to see where Nintendo goes from here. In a strictly development sense, I think we're fine. We have Miyamoto, we have Ayanuma, we have, you know, Sakurai. I mean, all the big dogs remain, and he was, you know, he has a lot of development background, but he wasn't a big development guy in comparison to these legends. So that'll remain the same, but in terms of the direction of the company, I'm fascinated to learn exactly what they do next. So stay tuned.
Yeah. Well, gentlemen, thank you so much for joining me. If you have enjoyed this podcast, I would highly recommend, if you want to learn more about this topic, head over to Wired.com. There's a really great article, like I mentioned, by Chris Kohler about Satoru Iwata. Nintendo Voice Chat is another podcast that I listen to that also did a really nice tribute to him, and they're generally a great podcast for listening to Nintendo news anyway. So we'll need to do another spotlight sometime, maybe on Miyamoto or Umatsu or some Japanese, cult celebrity in the games industry. Although, I mean, Howard Lincoln, Nolan Bushnell, there's a lot of American and Western people who have huge influences on the gaming industry. So, again, gentlemen, thank you so much for joining me. I've been your host, Chris Bashan, and talking in this spotlight episode about Satoru Iwata have been
Christian Masonic
and T. Scott Ross.